you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Coach Cricket Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I'm joined today by Rob Armand. Rob is the strength and conditioning coach for Glamorgan County Cricket Club, a first-class county over here in the UK. So tell us a bit about your experience of working with cricketers.
Yes, a long time ago, actually. I first started working with cricketers in 2000, and that was the University Centre of Excellence cricket team. What that comprised of was three local universities, and they formed a combined squad. And the work that I was initially involved with was just as their physiologist. So I tested them at 3 or 4 points during the year and designed a training program to help improve their, well, at that time we primarily looked at aerobic fitness. Mm-hmm. So that lasted for about 3 years. And in 2003, I started working with the Glamorgan County Cricket Club Academy, where I was in charge of the physical development of the players, ranging from ages from 15 up to 18. They report back to me after their kind of month off in October, and I'd see them right the way through until their season started again in March. Then in 2007, I actually started work with the senior squad, and I've been involved with the senior team ever since, so as the full-time strength and conditioning coach. I've never been a cricketer myself, and never played the game, but I've always grown up kind of watching cricket, and a lot of my friends play cricket, so it's always kind of been quite a big part of me.
So do you think it's an advantage to a certain extent to come from outside the game when you haven't got sort of all the baggage that comes with it? Do you think that's a certain advantage?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people do think that, you know, you need to play the game at a high level to kind of coach the game at a high level, which in terms of the kind of technical side of things may be quite applicable, but in terms of the fitness aspects, then I think it's actually quite good to come into it not having picked up any of the kind of stereotypes that are associated with cricket or any kind of sport in particular, really. So you kind of come into it fresh, and then you can apply your own style of training to the cricketers as you see fit, really.
That's interesting. So when you're talking about fitness for cricket, how would you define that?
It's quite strange, and with a lot of other sports, you can kind of define quite easily where the kind of sport sits. But with cricket, in my opinion, it's an absolute mixture of every kind of fitness aspect yeah. that you can have. You need speed, yeah. you need power, you need strength, you need agility, you need endurance, you need reactive agility. You also need stability as well, so in terms of injury prevention. Mm. So in terms of the actual fitness aspects that you need for cricket, then you need to have a little bit of everything. And in some cases, you need to develop certain aspects more than other aspects as well. But in general, it's an all round kind of sport where all the aspects apply.
Traditionally, that perhaps been frowned upon, fitness in generally has been frowned upon at every level, really. I know now, certainly yeah. at the professional level, there's a lot less resistance to fitness training specific fitness training, which includes all of those elements that you talked about. Thinking about lower down the scale, there's probably the lower down the scale you go, the higher that resistance becomes. How, if you were talking to somebody who was sceptical about fitness training for cricket, what would you say to them?
I think the way I'd approach it is I'd offer them specific examples of how the aspects of fitness that cricket involve, how they actually apply to a game, and then just kind of talk through that there are, you know, you do need more than just aerobic training, which is what I feel that a lot of cricketers at kind of club level tend to focus on. They just tend to focus on their aerobic fitness. But if you look at cricket and break it down into specific examples, then you can see that there's a lot of other different parameters involved, and that you do have to be fit and strong in certain areas. For example, if you look at speed, you need to be quick to run in between the wickets. You can't not train your speed and expect to be quick in between the wickets. The same thing applies to reactive ability and agility. Not only do you have to react to kind of verbal cues from your batting partner who says, no, run again, but you also have to react to a ball coming at you at 85, 90 miles an hour. So whether you kind of duck if you're batting or whether you're running for a catch, there's lots of different situations where speed and agility are of vital importance to cricket. At the same time, Power is also another key area. If you think of throwing a ball or even bowling, takes a lot of power, and just training for endurance won't give you the extra zip that you need. So I just think that that's probably the way I'd approach it, is just by highlighting specific examples within the game itself and how training for, say, endurance wouldn't help develop those other characteristics.
Yeah, that's interesting. Michael Boyle, who's a strength coach in America, talks about a level between sort of general training for cricket, for skill training and actually playing, and general sports, non-specific sports training. So speed is always speed. If you're fast, you're always going to be fast. It doesn't matter what you're doing, what game you're playing on top of that. So I find that an interesting concept, where you can take a specific type of training and then apply it to any sport, and cricket's included in that.
A mistake that kind of is often made with speed is the fact that speed is actually a skill, and it needs to be trained as a skill. A lot of people try and train speed when they're in a fatigued state, which basically you're just reinforcing your ability to run slow. So something that I'm kind of really hot on with my guys is that speed is always trying to train really early in the week when the lads are at the freshest, or if we're doing a combined session, then speed is always the first part of the session. So you have to kind of understand how the different parameters fit into a training week or training structure as well, and that just allows you to get the best from it.
And what other mistakes do you see people making when they're training for a sport like cricket and they want to get fit?
Yeah, I think one of the things I see most often is over-reliance on one kind of training parameter. As I've already mentioned, a lot of cricketers think that you just need to be aerobically fit, so they'll just kind of concentrate on the aerobic side of things. So that's probably the biggest mistake I see, is over-reliance on one kind of training parameter. The other thing I'd probably see is isolation training. So a lot of people, they like, today is my chest day, so they'll go off and they'll perform eight sets of dumbbell bench and eight sets of incline bench and so on and so forth, and they're not actually training the body as a whole as it should be used. The other thing I'd probably say is, again, linked to that, would be poor repetition choice. I think 3x10 or 3 sets of 10 reps seems to be a kind of favourite choice of trainers throughout the world. But again, if you're looking to develop strength or power or endurance, then you need to manipulate your sets and reps to reflect what the goals are. So 3x10 for every exercise, it doesn't really work. For some exercises and for some outcomes, then yeah, it's great. But if you're looking to develop strength, increase the number of sets, decrease the number of reps, and increase the amount of weight you're lifting. The other thing I see is not enough mobility and stability training done. For me, this is key, especially the stability training. There's quite high incidences of injuries in cricketers. Fast bowlers are mainly injured through their hamstrings and low back. And then obviously, with all the throwing that the lads do, then there's obviously the high risk of a shoulder injury through eccentric loading as the body slows the arm down. So all this kind of eccentric work that both the bowlers and throwers go through just really needs, you need to have a mobility and stability program in place to help offset these changes that go on.
And when we say eccentric work, we're talking about the way that the muscle is contracting when you're doing a very powerful movement like jumping or throwing or bowling, right?
Yeah, the muscle. For example, throwing, the eccentric portion of that would be as your arms cocked and behind you, as you actually throw the ball and release the ball, the eccentric portion of the throwing is actually slowing your arm back down again as it comes back across the body, and that it just means that the muscles lengthen under tension, and that lengthening under tension actually creates a lot of stress and strain in the muscles, and can lead to lots of damage over time that need to be, and these problems need to be addressed, so that you're not kind of setting yourself up for an overuse or kind of chronic type injury.
So with the right sort of training, you can get that eccentric contraction of the muscle to be more efficient, and therefore you're less likely to get injured.
Yeah, you definitely make the contraction more efficient, and at the same time, you'll also make sure that the joints in your body are working at their most efficient as well, so everything is in the correct, the muscles fire in the correct order. and the joint is in the correct position. So this, I mean, this is particularly important for shoulder, work. Lads through throwing tend to lose internal rotation through the shoulder. So purely because of the amount of throwing that they do, and the eccentric loading on the posterior shoulder capsule just means they have to put in a lot of internal rotation stretches on the shoulder. And again, you kind of couple that with performing some kind of lower trap activation work and kind of serratus anterior activation work.
So you're balancing out the effects of throwing by essentially doing the opposite of throwing in the gym.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, that's quite a good analogy. So, or once you've thrown, you're kind of resetting the muscles back to their normal length by some internal rotation stretching, and then reactivating the muscles that actually control the scapula and the humerus through during overhead motions.
So, for example of a stretch like that, say the classic one perhaps would be, you know, you stand in a doorway and you stretch your chest and your arm outwards so you can feel the stretch in the front. Would that be an example?
That could be one. What that stretch does tend to do is put a lot of stress on the anterior shoulder capsule, and we're actually looking to take stress from the anterior shoulder capsule and apply a little bit more stress to the posterior shoulder capsule. Probably a good stretch to do would be, again, you could use a doorway, but instead of your arm being up at 90 degrees, you just rotate your arm down through the other way. So instead of your fingers pointing up the ceiling, your fingers pointing at the floor. And your forearm is up against the door jamb and you press against it. And that way you're forcing the arm into internal rotation, which is the stretch you actually need to help counteract the loss of internal rotation that throwers tend to get. Another one was just kind of what they call the sleep stretch. So you kind of lie on your throwing side.
Yeah.
Again, arm at 90 degrees to the body. And again, you push your hand gently down to the floor, and again, you'll feel a stretch across the front side of the shoulder.
So with that one, with the sleeper stretch, if you're trying to picture that in your head, it's as if you're lying on your side in bed with your arm underneath you.
Yeah, if you're a right arm thrower, you'd be laying on your right hand, on a right hand shoulder, with your arm at 90 degrees to your body, hand pointing up to the ceiling, and then you just use your other hand to gently push your palm down to the floor.
Okay.
In front of you.
And you also mentioned, if we go back to what you were talking about with the isolation training, because that links in with this as well, we're looking at muscles firing in the right order for big movements like playing a shot or bowling or throwing. You need a certain amount of coordination and everything going in the right order to be able to do that. That's where the isolation training lacks crossover to the cricket pitch. Because you're training
definitely.
More like a bodybuilder is trying to improve the size and the strength of a particular body part, like a chest or your bicep with bicep curls.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's not going to translate as well to the cricket pitch because you're not isolating those muscles when you're out there playing.
No, exactly. The body functions in movements. Not the body thinks of itself in movements rather than muscles. So it's no good kind of going out and just working the chest muscle for the day. You're better off using multiple joints and multiple movements to train the body, and then that has a much, much greater transfer back to the kind of sporting environment. So although bench press is a good idea, but then you'd maybe include some vertical pressing and definitely include some horizontal pulling and some vertical pulling. So where you're not just using you're not just using one single joint. There's multiple joints and multiple muscle groups being involved.
So when you're thinking about a training program, rather than thinking, right, which body part am I going to train, you think more like, which movement am I going to train? So it's going to be pushing or pulling.
Yeah, and that basically applies to the lower body as well. So in terms of movements, you'd be looking at knee-dominant exercises, for example, lunges.
Yeah.
You could be looking at hip-dominant exercises, so you could be looking at Romanian deadlifts, normal deadlifts, back squats. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of move into upper body, so obviously you can do vertical and horizontal pushing and vertical and horizontal pulling as well. And then obviously not forgetting the trunk, where there's a couple of different patterns that the trunk actually goes through. So you'd look at rotational exercises and stabilization exercises.
Okay. And you also mentioned set and rep manipulation. So as a general rule, again, speaking generally, if you want to go for strength, then you'd be having a lower number of reps with a higher weight.
Yeah, definitely. Strength work, you'd be looking at maybe anywhere from 4 to 6 sets of maybe anywhere from 3 to 6 reps, and again, with a higher weight.
Yeah.
And then any kind of hypertrophy work, then you'd be looking at your kind of 3 sets of 10 or 3 sets of 12. But the difference that you do there, or the difference that you'd use, would be in terms of rest periods. Strength work, you obviously want the body at pretty much 95% fully rested before you start the next set. So you take maybe 2 to 3 minutes. Whereas with hypertrophy work, what you're trying to do is force the body to actually grow. You want incomplete recovery, so you maybe rest for 60 seconds and then go into the second set.
And the general focus would be on strength, but you can also put in more size or hypertrophy or that kind of training as well, as long as that's not the main emphasis.
Yeah, definitely. I think if the cricketer or if the player is lacking lower limb size, then you'd maybe use the first couple of weeks back training as a general just kind of hypertrophy program, so they just get a little bit more muscle mass on the lower limbs before kind of moving off to perform some kind of heavy strength work. So there's quite a direct relationship between muscle size and strength. So if you just increase the muscle size a little bit, you're going to get an increased strength, and then they can kind of go off into their strength phase.
One thing that a lot of people fear is if they head to the gym and they do that kind of training, then they're going to explode into such an enormous size that they won't be able to perform their skill anymore. Do you come across that particular fear at the professional level?
Yeah, definitely. At the professional level, that was one of the first fears that I encountered, was I can't lift weights too heavy or too often because I get too big.
Mm.
So, and these kind of misconceptions do actually take a while to break down, because the reason these came about is, again, because of this 3x10 kind of rule where people always perform 3 sets of 10. And 3 sets of 10 will actually make muscles start growing. It will actually give you this kind of growth spurt.
Mm.
But again, that's not going to help your cricket performance. What's going to help your cricket performance is strength work, so you're able to produce lots of force in a short amount of time.
Yes.
So it is something that you kind of fight against quite often. And what people also should remember is that these people that you see on the front of bodybuilding magazines, then not always have they achieved that through their natural genetics and good eating. There could be some other pharmacological agents at work to help them achieve their kind of goals. And the other thing is, it takes a long, long time to get to the point where you're 16 and a half, 17 stones of solid muscle with a 4.5%, 5% body fat. It's not something that happens in a 4-month, 5-month cricket off-season training plan. So that was the kind of way that I kind of approached it with my pro guys. And they've all bought into it.
And I take it, despite all the training that you've been doing with them, none of them have suddenly become a contender for Mr. Olympia?
No, none of them, thankfully. Although they have improved their kind of squat scores by almost 100%. So, which is really good. Initially, they were kind of squatting maybe 75% of body weight, and now they're squatting 1.5 to 2 times body weight. So, and there hasn't been any kind of extra increase in weight, and they haven't noticed any change in their speed or anything. So, now after the kind of first and second year of training, these things are actually starting to click a little bit more for them, and they can actually see what's going on, rather than just somebody saying, "Oh, this is what's going to happen." Now they actually can see it and feel it for themselves. It just makes things a lot easier.
Absolutely. So there's the proof. You know, you've done it. You've done it with people working at a professional level, and they haven't, and their fears have not been met. So you can't offer more proof than that, can you?
No, exactly.
So what other techniques do you use with the professionals to get the best from them?
I think structure is probably the biggest technique. Now, in terms of how the week is structured, how a session is structured. I think once you structure things efficiently, you start getting the best from it. It's all too easy just to kind of run into the gym and after you finish work, right, I'm just going to train chest today, and think, oh, I'll do some flies first, then some heavy bench press, and then I'll go off and do some pec deck, and then maybe some chin-ups to finish.
Yeah.
And kind of following a kind of haphazard plan kind of will not get you anywhere. You're better off following a proper periodized plan with some structure to it, and that will help you achieve your goals a lot more and help you achieve your goals a lot quicker than not following a plan at all. So in terms of how the guys, or what the guys work at the minute, is they perform 3 total body sessions a week. And they'll perform Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, with cardio days and recovery days in between. Similarly, in season, which is again a key time for these guys, obviously they're playing, but again, certain things need to perform at certain times. As I said previously, it'd be no good performing your speed work at the end of the week when you're fatigued. So if speed work kind of needs to be performed on a Monday, then you kind of do your kind of power work on a Tuesday. Maybe have a recovery day Wednesday. Thursday would be kind of strength work. Friday fitness, and then kind of Saturday, Sunday recovery, and then off. And then you're kind of back through your kind of pre-season cycle again, or leading up to a game. That is the kind of some good structure. Another kind of good structure would be the kind of warm-up side of things. And I know Mike Boyle is really hot on this, and it's something that I've adapted from him, so I have to kind of pass the credit to him, is the way this, you kind of warm up for sessions. So you kind of use a foam roll first, so you look to inhibit the kind of muscle groups that are tight, then you kind of look to lengthen them through some static stretching, you go through some activation exercises, and then you actually integrate the exercises. So for example, if you're looking at doing some lower body work, you maybe foam roll your quads, your IT bands, and your calves. Then you do some very quick static stretching, particularly of hip flexors. They tend to be tight in a lot of people. Then you go on to do some activation work, particularly for the glutes. So you look at glute medius, glute maximus work. And then you move into the actual squatting, lunging, so on, and the kind of main focus of your session.
So it's preparing to move before you actually go into the big movements that we talked about a little bit before.
Yeah, basically, prepare to move before you go into the main session.
What about when it comes to kind of endurance or work capacity style training? What kind of stuff do you do there? Because traditionally, as we've said, you know, it might be a long run. You know, you go out for a run for 20 minutes, half an hour. But the general thinking now is moving away from that. Yeah. So what do you do when it comes to building up conditioning?
Yeah, I use a mixture. A lot of people say, you know, long distance runs are kind of key to kind of developing aerobic endurance. But if you look very closely at the scientific literature, you'll find that high intensity intervals are the way forward. So you're looking at 2 minutes on, 1 minute off, or 1 minute on, 2 minute off, whatever kind of time and rest choice you look at, they've been used and kind of studied in the research. They've all been shown to improve aerobic endurance or aerobic power more than say 70% run at for 20 minutes. And that's not to say, though, that some long distance work isn't necessary, because for me, I think some long distance, well, not I say long distance, I'd say a 20 minute run is great for recovery purposes. So as well as your kind of pool recovery, I also like the guys get on their feet and do some active recovery, particularly for the players in season if they haven't played, because obviously cricket, you operate with a 12th man. If they haven't played for that day, then they can go out for a 20-minute run or run some shuttles. Or similarly, if a batsman gets out for not very many, he obviously doesn't want to impact on what he's going to do tomorrow or do the following day, so he's a good way to kind of get around and get him doing some exercise and send him out for a 20-minute active recovery kind of run. Going back to the intervals, I use a real wide variety. The lads this morning were out doing hill sprints, so where we kind of did certain numbers of reps at certain distances and obviously kind of walk back recovery. So I personally tend to use a lot of kind of high intensity work, and then leave the kind of the low intensity, longer, slow distance stuff for recovery work.
I see. So in terms of if you're putting it in a kind of an order of importance, it would be the intervals first, and then if you can squeeze them in, then it would be the more long, slow distance kind of stuff. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Intervals first, and then long, slow distance stuff second.
So. In your opinion, then, it's slightly different from club cricket. It's slightly different from professional cricket in that the professionals, especially in the UK, are playing in season. Certainly, are playing a lot more. You know, you're playing perhaps 7 or 8 days in a row sometimes, and then other times perhaps you have a few days off. But you're playing almost all the time, and club players are playing maybe 2 games at the weekend, and maybe a 20 over game in the week. That would be the long and the short of it. But at the other end of the scale, club players have got less time to train in the winter because they're working or at school or whatever they're doing, and the professionals can focus on it 100%. So how would you say that you can adapt those kind of techniques that we've been talking about into club players?
I think the main thing for the club players is they've obviously got, I think their probably biggest challenge is they've got less time to train than the pros. And so what that means is you have to get most bang for your buck. So every session you do has to have a good aim and objective, and then you need to kind of structure the sessions well so you meet those aims and objectives. So one of the major things I think club players could do would be go total body training rather than body parts. So instead of going to the gym 4 or 5 times a week, you can maybe go twice or 3 times a week and still get effective sessions. The other thing could be rotating set and rep parameters during the week. So you maybe look to develop strength work and power work early on in the week, and then look to develop kind of 3 sets of 12, 3 sets of 15, your hypertrophy and endurance work towards the end of the week. Again, same thing could apply with endurance work. Get your kind of high intensity intervals done first thing in the week, and then your kind of long slow distance stuff done later on in the week. And then if you think about this, you can actually combine some energy system development work into your technical sessions. So if you do have a technical session, then kind of maybe do a dynamic warm-up to start and include a couple of sprint starts. That is a great way of kind of getting the body ready to rock, if you like, and then finish up with some shuttles. So you can actually perform some what I like to call overs, where you perform a set of 6 sprints with 30 seconds recovery in between. And then that's basically, I think, the best way the club players can adapt these techniques, is just by thinking about how can you get the most out of each session. And it's just a matter of kind of structuring things very slightly differently, or adding in changing your warm up from a slow jog around the indoor net a couple of times and touching your toes to doing a dynamic warm up and including a couple of sprints. And if that was performed once or twice a week, that would be really good speed development work. But overall, I think just keep things simple, obviously train consistently, and then, you know, just try and get strong and eat right and eat clean.
Yeah, that's important. What about people who perhaps haven't got access to a gym, body weight training? Is there an advantage to training at home?
I think the major advantage to training at home is you don't actually pay any gym memberships.
Yeah.
But no, there is definitely, I wouldn't say definitely advantage, but there are things you can do at home. The way you kind of structure, again, squats, press-ups, lunges, crunches, planks, there's so many different ways you can structure these things at home. You can get, particularly at the club level, you can get just an effective workout at home as you can do by going to the gym, and it can be done in half the time because you haven't got that kind of travelling time to the gym and then meeting up with your friend afterwards for a cup of tea or a cup of coffee. And, you know, so training at home is definitely something that club players could look to include. And again, bodyweight training could be included at the end of a technical session. So instead of running some shuttles, then you can actually include maybe some bodyweight training at the end of the technical session, and kind of so you're covering all your bases that way. So you're getting your technical work, and you've done some speed work, then you just finish up with some bodyweight training that's going to help improve strength and endurance.
Yeah, and if you're very organised, I suppose you can get hold of some dumbbells or something and take those along to the session as well, and you can really sort of, you know, with a couple of dumbbells and your own body weight, you can throw a lot of stuff in there that otherwise a lot of people just wouldn't be doing anything at all.
Yeah, definitely. I had the good fortune of meeting the next Special Forces member a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking training, and one of the things he said he used to do with his kind of guys was just some bodyweight training. He said it's only 5 minutes, but he said it's one of the best workouts you'll ever do. Basically, the workout was you do maximum number of press-ups for a minute, you rest for 5 seconds, and you do sit-ups, rest for 5 seconds, squat thrusts, rest for 5 seconds, burpees, rest for 5 seconds, then finish up with star jumps. and you count each number, each the total number of reps, and you give yourself a kind of baseline score, and then you go off and each week you try and improve on that. That only takes 5 minutes, and I mean, I did it, and it was one of the best workouts I've ever done, to be honest. Just body weight, just obviously body weight wise.
That's going to be a hard 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, it wasn't my most favourite 5 minutes of my life. Then looking back now, I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad I've accomplished it. But I've set myself a little target, and I'll be going back to that challenge in a couple of weeks. But that is what training is all about. It's not meant, sometimes it's not meant to be easy. It's meant, you have to challenge yourself, and this is what. Especially if you're a club player and you don't have these times, then each time you kind of train, you actually have to challenge yourself just to kind of get the most out of the sessions.
Absolutely. I think it is a lot about getting as much in as you can and not really worrying about being perfectly able to do something. I mean, if you can get to the gym, then the gym is a good way to train, to do your strength training. But if you can't get to the gym, then do what you can and try and integrate it in.
Yeah, there's plenty of other options out there if you can't get access to the gym. Plenty of other options.
Yeah, exactly. So would your advice change if we were talking about more specific people? So if we're talking specifically about women or about younger players who, they're a perfect example of someone who perhaps might not be able to go to the gym because the gym doesn't allow under 18s or under 16s or something.
Yeah, I think if we tackle the younger players first, this is one of the things I'm kind of quite passionate about is younger players and how they actually start training, because I feel that young players actually specialise too early in their chosen sports, and this kind of leaves them open to kind of overuse injuries when at a really early age, when they shouldn't kind of be getting things. It also means that their kind of overall skill development is kind of very stunted slightly. So if you've played rugby and football alongside cricket, then you've got really good turning ability and reactive agility, and you've got some really good endurance, because those sports have got a high endurance demand. But I think if you kind of play cricket or any sport for too long, then you just kind of lose other skills that you have, and it's at the end it's detrimental. So for me, I think for younger players, it's play a variety of sports up until a certain age, and then you kind of start specialising later on in life. And obviously the thing for people who aren't old enough to go to the gym is just learn to do the basics well. It's everyone should be able to do 20 bodyweight press-ups with really, really good form. So there's a nice straight line running down through, if you look kind of sideways on, there's a nice straight line running down through the body. And once you've kind of learned to do the basics well, you put yourself in a much better position to go on and complete much harder and much more kind of technically demanding training. In other words, going to the gym and performing overhead squats or performing one-arm bench press or performing chin-ups. So, for me, basically, my overall thing with youth training is don't specialise too early and just learn to do the basics well.
And with female players?
Yeah, females, again, pose a slightly different set of problems. They've naturally got a wider pelvis, which means that they've got something called a greater Q angle. I mean, if you kind of look at the kind of physiology textbooks, they'll go into a little bit more detail about it. But basically what a larger Q angle means is they're basically at more higher risk of non-contact ACL injuries or anterior cruciate ligament injuries. So in other words, what you need to do with females is put a lot of focus on good lower body mechanics and injury prevention. So you need to kind of start them off at a really, really low level in terms of, plyometric work would be a no-no until they can all perform a certain number of squats with a certain kind of weight effectively and there's no kind of deviations. But then you would kind of perform some really low intensity plyometric work where you're teaching them how to land again with top form. So for females, upper body wise, I don't see any problems. Then they kind of train to their own kind of level, if you like. So they're obviously not going to lift as much weight absolutely as the males, but relatively, they're lifting weights or loads that are kind of challenging them. I think the biggest thing for females is just optimizing lower body mechanics, basically.
Okay. But apart from that, really, in terms of sets and reps and exercises and things like that, there wouldn't be any difference at all, and there's no fear again. We're going back to the fear of, you know, getting too bulky and all
yeah,
the rest of it.
Yeah, well, females, yeah. I mean, to get too bulky, you need a lot of testosterone. Females naturally have got lower levels of testosterone than males.
Yeah.
It's something that, again, takes a long time to develop those big muscles. And I said, sometimes they have been they have been enhanced. So, I personally don't see females performing kind of low rep or high weight training or heavyweight training. Sorry, that's going to affect their body composition too much. If anything, it's actually going to affect them favorably because they'll be increasing their lean body mass and they'll actually burn more calories throughout the day. So it could actually, strength training can actually help improve their body composition. And obviously with youths, then you wouldn't kind of apply heavy load until the young player has stopped growing. So one of the things I do on a weekly basis for my academy lads is I actually measure them. So we actually look at their height week by week to determine where they're kind of going through growth spurts. And if they are, then we'll kind of back off the trainer very slightly. And obviously some of the older lads, kind of 17, 18, they kind of stop growing, and they're now at the kind of age where we can kind of start adding some extra load into their training regimes.
Okay, so with the younger players, you have to be a bit more cautious with the heavier weights. So the focus really more is on technique.
Yeah, the focus is on technique, and then obviously you can increase the load little by little. So I mean, you wouldn't kind of jump in straight to doing, say, heavy sets of kind of four squats with like a 15-year-old, one, because their technique hasn't developed, and two, because they're not kind of skeletally mature enough to kind of be able to cope with that. So you'd work until their kind of techniques were rock solid and keep on adding weight. And then at the same time, you'd just keep an eye on how their kind of height was progressing. And if you're pretty sure they've stopped growing, then you could kind of start adding some more load. Or if they're kind of skeletally mature, then you can start adding some more load.
So let's look at one last question we'll look at, which is something for particularly for people listening who are in the subcontinent, who have longer much longer seasons than they do over here in the UK or in Australia, where you could have a 9-month season. And you also see it at professional level, where you have players perhaps playing in the summer in the UK and then playing in the winter in Australia or in India or something like that. So players who have an extended season like that, what kind of fitness advice can you give to them?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that obviously happens in the UK as well. I mean, our season this year at Glamorgan Cricket lasted 180 days. Mm. 92 of those days were playing, and obviously the rest were kind of rest days or travel days, and we played 44 games in those 180 days. So seasons are, really, really long. And as you said previously, we are sometimes playing for 6, 7, 8 days on the trot. And for me, recovery is a key factor for these during these long seasons. When you're going from playing a 4-day game, then you play a 1-day game, then you a day off, and then you're playing another 4-day game. That day in that day off, or that day in between, needs to be used kind of really well for recovery. But I'm not saying that players don't actually train during the in-season, but there's times and places, and there's ways to kind of get around that. If the players have 2 or 3 days off on the trot, then you need to kind of get some strength work and some kind of high-intensity cardio work or interval work done early on in those days off. At the same time, because the players are continuously playing, they'll be performing a warm-up every day. Again, that's a great time to get involved or to include some dynamic flexibility work, some light, low-intensity plyometrics, and some speed drills. So throughout the season, you can actually you can maintain your speed just by performing these warm-ups. And obviously, if you vary the warm-up day by day and week by week, you can actually target different aims and different parameters. So you actually kind of use the warm-up or the pre-game warm-up as a mini training session, if you like. So in those 20 minutes that you have before the players come out, you actually get them doing, say, right, this week we're just going to focus on starting mechanics. So you'll get players focusing on the starts. So overall, yeah, I think recovery is the key to the season, but there are times and places where you do need to get some strength work in. And if you do have a stretch of a couple of days off, that's the time to get it in. And then just use the warm-ups really effectively.
So the golden rule is really that stuff that requires lots of recovery, like the strength work or the power work, that kind of thing, that yep. you need to have a little bit of rest after that. So
yeah, definitely. If you had 3 days off, then you perform the strength or power work on that first day, just to give yourself a couple of clear days before you go back into playing again.
Okay.
Because what tends to happen is, my experience of the last couple of seasons is the players tend to get a weights training session in or a power or strength training session in every kind of 7 to 10 days. So obviously their kind of off-season frequency, they're training maybe 4 or 5 times a week in the gym, and then the cardio's on top of that. So to only get a dedicated session in every 7 to 10 days, just kind of have to be a little bit careful that the kind of you aren't leaving the kind of players sore
yeah.
coming into the game. So that way, you know, you kind of always do the work first as kind of soon as possible in that kind of mini break, if you like, just to give them adequate time to recover, and as well as physically recover, they need to mentally recover.
Yeah.
So then go back into the kind of next round of games.
So there's always things you can do. It's just a matter of being a little bit clever about it.
Yeah, so there's always things you can do, and it just boils down to structure again. I feel that if you've got your kind of list of games for the year, if you can just kind of write down and write the games down, work out where your kind of free spots are, and think, right, you know, we've got a couple of days here, we'll kind of focus on this, and actually plan them into the kind of playing schedule.
Excellent. So it's just a matter of being a little bit clever. I quite like that. I quite like that idea of sort of having a couple of different plans, and you can just jump on whichever one fits yeah. in with whatever the requirement is at that particular time. So it's been a bit clever, I think. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, I think that probably covers all the questions that I wanted to go through with you today, Rob. So thank you very much for taking the time out, because I know you're busy. So thank you very much for taking the time out to speak to me, and also to the,
the
Pitch Vision guys. If there's any questions that come up from this, then as usual, we can be contacted on mycoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks again to Rob, and we'll see you again next time. Thanks, Rob.
Cheers.